This is Jim Inkster, and thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. This is Politics Friday on WRKF in Baton Rouge and WWNO in New Orleans, and we invite your participation at 877-217-5757, emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. We begin with Mark Ballard, who's in the nation's capital, and yesterday was one of those news days like few others. If you picked up your Advocate or Picayune today, the headline on page one, above the fold, Trump indicted. Also above the fold, Edwards says he'll veto anti-LGBTQ legislation. Ruling could change Louisiana's congressional maps. A historic ruling yesterday and a surprise one from the U.S. Supreme Court. And we'll talk about all of that with Mark Ballard and later much of it with General Honoré. But Mark yesterday, being the reporter that he is, was with Steve Scalise, the majority leader in the U.S. House, the pride of Jefferson Parish. And Steve Scalise was visiting none other with Brian Kelly, head football coach, Louisiana State University, no national titles, and Nick Saban, Alabama football coach, seven national titles. And what were they talking about, Mark Ballard?
Name, image, and likeness legislation. That's the rules that the NCAA has allowed student athletes to make money off of their name as student athletes. It's mostly used as commercials, which we see all the time in billboards and television commercials. They're not supposed to do a pay-for-play type of arrangement. But it's also, the rules are kind of amorphous because all 50 states have different rules on how this NIL applies. And what the SEC was in Washington yesterday for was to see if Congress will jump in with with laws that will oversee the entirety of the country for NIL. And that was what they were in there talking about.
Well, the majority leader, Representative Scalise, says we're working with the NCAA, universities, and other partners to address this issue and come together on a solution that we all can agree upon. And Steve Scalise is a fan, particularly of LSU. He was at the celebration for the women's team, which won the national title. And Steve Scalise is a guy who comes to games and wears LSU on his sleeve, and good for him, as many people in this state do. He's very proud of his alma mater, Mark.
He is indeed, and he takes every opportunity that he can to wear purple and gold, which is not colors that you see very often here in the nation's capital.
And my friend Darren Mann has noted that Scalise, when he was in the legislature, sponsored a bill that would have prohibited state inmates from lifting weights, which I thought was kind of curious. I would think guards with guns could take care of any buffed-up inmate, but Steve Scalise, who's probably not lifted many weights in his life, didn't want inmates pumping iron while they were incarcerated.
That was an issue a couple of 3 years ago or a few years ago about the only thing that we do for prisoners is help them get buff.
It didn't go very far. 877-217-5757. And, of course, there are larger issues. We completed a legislative session, and back in the day, Mark would have been there at the finish line, and Governor John Bel Edwards, even in a time when the state had lots of money, as it does right now. He was disappointed that $100 million was taken out of the Department of Health budget, which could also mean that matching funds from the feds could be involved, which would involve more than $100 million. And he was perturbed that the legislature, in a fiscal session of all sessions, weighed in on LGBTQ plus legislation, and Edwards says he will veto three bills. So does that mean we're headed for a veto session, Mark Ballard?
You know, I'm unsure. Unlike the redistricting bill that where the veto was overridden, I've not heard a whole lot of organization among the Republicans to do this, but you know, I'm not in Baton Rouge on the ground floor anymore, so I may have missed something.
Well, these bills passed by veto-proof margins, but as you know, lawmakers generally don't like coming back. And chances are, if things go according to form, and sometimes they do and sometimes they don't, as we know, but next year there might be a governor who would be more than eager to sign those bills.
I would think that that's true, and that may be what is will keep them from coming back, because the legislators will also be running for re-election, and they probably don't want to waste a whole lot of time back in Baton Rouge.
The big story of the day before the Trump indictment was announced last night, but this one has major implications for Louisiana. Opponents of our state's Republican-drawn political maps are optimistic the state will soon have new maps that would include a second-majority black congressional district. This is after the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in favor of black plaintiffs in a similar Alabama case. Now, the ruling, as I understand it, means that black candidates will have a chance to win, not necessarily that it's a black majority district. For example, in Baton Rouge, there have been five straight mayoral elections won by black Democrats in a majority white parish. So sometimes the coalition is such that a black candidate can win, and those candidates have won by big margins every time but once. There was one race that was relatively close between Bodie White and Sharon Weston Broome, but other than that, it's been a case in which black politicians, Democrats, have dominated the mayor's office in Baton Rouge. And in Baton Rouge, for example, with East Baton Rouge Parish, with a white majority, albeit slight, John Bel Edwards got 66% of the votes against Eddie Rasponi and 68% of the votes in East Baton Rouge Parish against David Vitter. So it would seem that based on the decision in Alabama with seven congressional districts and a population that's 27% African-American, that Louisiana would, you would think, would have two congressional districts that could be competitive with our population of black citizens at about one-third. So what are your thoughts, Mark? Two out of six wouldn't seem to be unreasonable. In fact, it would fit in almost identically with the decision the court made in Alabama.
Well, yeah, at the point of view, we have a larger minority population than does Alabama. The key things to remember, there are 31 states that have challenged what they call gerrymandered districts for congressional districts. But there are two, us, Louisiana, and Georgia, in which lower courts have actually made a ruling saying redraw those maps. Chief Judge Dick in Baton Rouge on June 6th, basically last year, said, you know, redraw those maps to include a second minority district. The arguments that were raised by the legislature against that decision were almost identical to the arguments that were raised in Alabama. So we probably will see this case be reopened, brought back to Judge Dick, and if she has not changed her mind over a year, the legislature will be ordered again to draw a second district. Now, that opens up a big possibilities of who is going to hurt. You know, some maps, it hurts Julia Letlow. Some maps would hurt Julia Letlow and Mike Johnson. Other maps would hurt Julia Letlow and Garrett Graves. And it really depends on what map is actually drawn.
As far as how the map is currently configured, the one that stands out is North Baton Rouge being in New Orleans, as far as Troy Carter representing both North Baton Rouge and the city of New Orleans. It would seem that North Baton Rouge should be in Garrett Graves' district. As I've noted, Baton Rouge and surrounding area has enough in and of itself to be a congressional district, and this would mean trouble for any Republican, no matter who that Republican would be, based on the results I just gave of the last several elections. But Cleo Fields was drawing districts, and the one that would have been nailed under his configuration was Julia Letlow. But is that a given if the state has to go back to the drawing board, Mark?
It is not a given. It was just the last one that was standing when the legislature said, no, we're going to go with the status quo maps. Rick Ward, who was a state senator at the time from Port Allen, also drew up a map, but it would have leaned more of the minority population into the 6th congressional district. And that is why the Cook Report, which is a respected political handicapper, changed its election prognosis for Julia Letlow's seat and Garrett Graves' seat from safe Republican to toss-up in the 2024 elections.
Looking ahead. Well, I doubt that both of them will get nailed, but it also means that there will be fewer black citizens, most likely, in the district represented by Troy Carter. But you would think, barring something really unusual, which happened when Bill Jefferson, under indictment, was clipped by Joe Gow, that would be a safe seat for an African-American Democrat. We'll talk about this and more with Mark Ballard. Again, your number 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Mark Ballard in Washington, D.C., where he is following the trends of the world, and there is much happening there. There remains an investigation involving the former President Donald Trump in Washington, D.C. There also is one in Atlanta, and now he's been indicted in two other places. He's been indicted in state court in New York and now in federal court in Miami. And the former president remains the front runner for the Republican presidential nomination. And he has endorsed Jeff Landry to be governor of Louisiana. And Jeff Landry was on our show yesterday, and he said he welcomed the endorsement for the person who's received more votes than any candidate in the history of Louisiana. In fact, Trump is 1 and 2 based on the votes he received in 2016 and in 2020 in Louisiana. 877-217-5757. And we're talking right now about the congressional shakeup in Louisiana, which could be in the offing. The Supreme Court, in a surprise decision, ruled that Alabama diluted the power of black voters, drawing a congressional voting map that reaffirmed a landmark civil rights law that had been thought to be in peril. Justice John Roberts, who often has voted to restrict voting rights and is generally skeptical of race-conscious decision-making by the government, wrote the majority opinion, and he was joined not only by the three liberals, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Ketanji Brown Jackson, but also by Brett Kavanaugh. Brett Kavanaugh was the surprise vote that enabled this to prevail, and it affects not only Alabama, but also Louisiana and Georgia. It could affect other states. And Amy Coney Barrett, the justice from the New Orleans area, voted the other way, as did Clarence Thomas, as did Sam Alito. No surprises there. But Mark Ballard, what about Kavanaugh? That came as a huge surprise to many on the left side of the spectrum who had all but given up on this case.
Yeah, going into this case, I mean, I think like a week before, I was reading a whole lot of, you know, the voting rights will be, which has been weakened in some parts by John Roberts. So I would argue that the Chief Justice's change of pace was more surprising than Kavanaugh. But they were assuming that it was going to be gutted, and that would be the end of Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. And so it came as quite a surprise, more so in my mind, more so that Chief Justice Roberts kind of authored the opinion and led the 5-4 vote.
And the fourth justice to vote in the minority was Neil Gorsuch. The Chief Justice wrote that there are legitimate concerns that the law may impermissibly elevate race in the allocation of political power within the states. He continues, our opinion does not diminish or disregard these concerns. It simply holds that a faithful application of our precedents and a fair reading of the record before us do not bear out. So it would seem that Louisiana is an almost identical case as Alabama, but as we know, sometimes there are surprises. So when would this happen? Would it happen before the next election next year, or would we wait until 2024?
Well, first, and I'm not a lawyer, so I just play one in the newspapers, but the first, the opinion has to come back down the pike, and then it'll have to be picked up by the plaintiffs of the three suits that were, or the suits that were consolidated under Chief Judge Shelley Dick in Baton Rouge. And then they would have to ask her to reinstate her order from June 6, 2022, which was suspended because of the Supreme Court hearings in the Alabama case. And then at that point, that order, if she doesn't change it from June 6, 2022, ordered the legislature to draw a second district that would make it competitive for a minority candidate. Not assured for a minority candidate, but competitive for a minority candidate. And so this could be happening fairly soon.
Yeah, and Shelley Dick notably was, as it turned out, in accord with the U.S. Supreme Court. So I will be interested to see how this plays out. It would seem that we're on the road to having the districts redrawn, as they were when Cleo Fields held a district that spanned all the way from Shreveport to Baton Rouge and zigzagged all over the state, hit every media market except New Orleans. And so it's happened before where a person on the left side of the spectrum was affected and Cleo Fields lost his seat. And now I would imagine there will be a battle royal on who survives among the Republicans. And Garrett Graves has been there longer. He's now, hard to believe, he was elected in 2014. He's coming up on 10 years. And quite possibly will be running for the U.S. Senate against Bill Cassidy. Letlow is a newbie. So is she playing a lesser hand than Garrett Graves, Mark Ballard?
Yeah, I don't think it's that raw. I mean, I think what was really going to be played is whether the North Baton Rouge population ends up in the in Letlow's district, or whether it ends up in Graves' district. And I think that's where we'll find out who wins on this. The other, we keep forgetting, but for more than a decade, the argument among progressives was that there should be one North Louisiana district, and it should go along the I-20 between Shreveport and Monroe, both of which are blue cities, and would make a more competitive district for a minority up there. That was kind of put by the wayside because the Republicans wanted two vertical Republican districts, and so that was when we started coming up with these other configurations, and that could pop up again.
Well, this indictment of Donald Trump yesterday caused many of his competitors on the Republican side to defend him, including Ron DeSantis, and he has been indicted in Miami. Where are the Louisiana congressional people? Obviously, Cassidy's not going to defend him, but where's John Kennedy? Where's Garrett Graves, Clay Higgins, Mike Johnson, Julia Letlow? Where are they? Steve Scalise? Are they going to defend Donald Trump?
They've kept quiet so far. You know, I would presume based on previous comments that they would, but there is also a move up here that you can see that is not quite hit the surface yet, but is basically trying to step away from Donald Trump. Now, I don't know if that's what our delegation is going to do because they haven't said yet, but that does play a role into attaching what they have previously said in previous issues into what, if anything, they say about this one.
Well, our delegation is extremely cautious when it comes to talking about Donald Trump, but they were all present when he was running with Eddie Rasponi. Three times he came to the state, and they were all there for the attack on John Bel Edwards, including Bill Cassidy at that time. The only one who did not come among major Republicans was Billy Nungesser, the lieutenant governor. But we live in a state where Trump, I would imagine, if the election were tomorrow, he would still win the Louisiana electoral votes. He would carry our state. But as we move ahead to 2024, we're in uncharted territory, aren't we?
We are, but I still think that Donald Trump could easily, will easily win Louisiana. And but we're in uncharted territory is because we have a civil lawsuit we have in New York, and we have criminal charges now coming out of the federal government, which has never happened before. And we just got to, and then there are also criminal charges, I believe, also coming out of New York City. So, and there's another investigation out there that could also produce charges against the former president. So, yeah, I would say it's uncharted.
Well, it will be interesting to cover, and we're glad you're in Washington, and you'll be talking, I'm sure, with the congressional delegation about this and more. Mark Ballard, always good to catch up with you. We'll visit next week if things go according to plan.
See you soon. Have a nice weekend.
You too. We'll be back with General Honoré after this. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Politics Friday on WWNO New Orleans 89.9, standing tall and proud for more than 50 years, and WRKF in Baton Rouge at 89.3, which has been a staple in the Capital Region for more than 40 years. 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Lieutenant General Russell Honoré is in the house, the man who guided us back from Katrina 18 years ago, and he's been following the action at the Capitol. Yesterday, we had another general on, and General Jeff Landry, the Attorney General, and now it's Lieutenant General Russell Honoré. They have somewhat different points of view about life, but they're both Louisiana people. There's no doubt about that. We know where they're from, and good morning to you, General Honoré.
Good morning. Back at you.
Good to talk with you. I've already gotten a few responses about, this is several years ago, but Steve Scalise did support and I think actually filed the legislation to prevent Louisiana inmates from lifting weights. And
interesting.
Yeah, and if we're going to rehabilitate people, wouldn't that be a good idea to teach them character and discipline and have them fit and ready to work?
Well, I would think so. Staying in shape and staying healthy is a good thing, too, because it reduced the medical costs. So it's directly opposite of what everybody would recommend, just keep your body in shape, even if you're in prison.
Well, especially if you're in prison, because I think the idea is to get out at some point and yeah. Now, Karen Merrifield, we were talking about President Trump, former mm-hmm. President Trump being indicted again. And I was mentioning that our congressional delegation is largely avoiding this, but not Clay Higgins. She says that Clay Higgins is all in for Donald Trump, and that does not come as a surprise. And it was Higgins who last week voted against raising the debt ceiling. He is a conservative and remains wildly popular in Acadiana. He, when I talk about Louisiana people, this is just an observation, not a criticism, but I don't know of any other state where Clay Higgins would be as popular as he is, but he is in Louisiana.
Yeah, he's got the attention of the people down there. They vote him in.
And overwhelmingly, So, Clay Higgins says this is a perimeter probe from his oppressors. So Clay Higgins is all in for the former president, and he's not alone in Louisiana. But I mentioned with Mark Ballard as we hit the break, this is uncharted territory, having a president in so much legal hot water trying to run a campaign. Donald Trump, if anything else, he's resilient, and he seems ready to go forward. He's not backing down. General Honoré, he's older than you are.
Well, this is another stress test for our democracy. And the courts have to work. We got to have confidence in our courts. And he's indicted, but he still have to go through the process. They have to prove it, and they have to go before a jury and a judge. I think the amount of noise coming out since this indictment has been read, it is big news, because it's the first time under this situation we've had a former president and a candidate being indicted while they're running for office in the next cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So this is new ground, but our democracy is strong. We just have to follow the law. We're a nation of laws. And if we follow the law, we'll, at the end of this thing, the court will meet, both sides will get in and give the best shot at either convicting or defending him. And we need to just let the court system work. I am surprised by the unified language coming out of the Congress right now from his Republican followers, portraying this as an indictment by his opponent on the Democratic side, who is the sitting president, couching this like we're some third world country where the people in office persecute their opposition. So I don't think that language is helping. And the young children listening to this who get some impression of how the democracy work, but I think they need to let democracy and let the law work. Everybody's got their opinion on, and a lot of Americans think somebody should be held accountable for these documents. And the ultimate person was the former president himself. And this shouldn't be hate speech. It's, you got to go to court now. That's the way the process works. And that's the way it happens for all Americans. We just had a Air Force Lieutenant Colonel sent to jail 3 years for mishandling and took documents. So if nobody's beyond the law, do we believe that? And I think it's a stress test for the democracy. But we survived 1-6, and we're going to need to survive this. We'll get through this. The news don't help. Because at every hour, the analysis going on is based on projection and based on individual preferences of the people who read the news or are debating it. And you can turn on the channel and figure out whether they're for him or against him.
877-217-5757 for Lieutenant General Russell Honoré. And we will go to the phone lines in just a moment. I did want to note that the only member of the House delegation from Louisiana to vote against raising the debt ceiling was Clay Higgins. The Senate was different. Both Cassidy and Kennedy voted no. Now, a listener asks, this is Tom in Baton Rouge, Blue Bonnet, about the session and energy and the Green Army. And I see what LABI released a recap saying one of LABI's major concerns this session was anti-carbon capture and sequestration. All of the measures failed either in committee or on the House floor. These bills would have, in various ways, writes LABI, limited or prohibited carbon capture in Louisiana, sending the message to the rest of the world that Louisiana is not open to the green energy industry. Do you look at it that way?
Well, it wasn't a proliferation of the green industry. It's taking carbon and putting it on the ground. I'm not quite sure how the green energy industry. We've got solar, and we're about to put wind in the Gulf. So that is coming based on the economics of providing energy and providing cleaner energy than coal and cleaner energy than natural gas. This will allow industry to say, hey, look, we're doing the right thing. We're going to put it under the ground and store it. And, oh, by the way, you're going to pay me to store it. You'll get tax credits to store it. What ended up coming out of the legislature was a Snake Snyder bill that basically give the parishes equity in the royalties from this, that all the money will not just go to the state and to the companies who are doing the carbon capture and getting the tax credit. Some of it will be shared. What has not been sorted out is the rules. We have to run pipelines. We're going into Lake Maupaw, one of the estuaries for our aquatics, as well as a sanctuary for people who live in that area who have camps. Many people from Baton Rouge have camps in Lake Maupaw. And it was a natural wildlife reserve for the state of Louisiana until this company decided they wanted to go drill a well there, and the state gave them a permit to go do it. And everybody's just totally surprised how the heck that happened. So the governor support carbon capture. The White House support it. They all see it as a path forward. We don't support it in the Green Army because it's an unproven technology, and it's a industry is lauding this as a way to build more factories between Baton Rouge and New Orleans because they can capture the greenhouse gas and the carbon and put it underground. But who want carbon at high pressure going through the aquifer? Who wanted to go under the lakes? Remember BP? Okay. That was supposed to be a high engineered, don't worry about it, and it blew up and messed up the Gulf.
Let's go to Dan, downtown Baton Rouge. Dan, you're on the air with Lieutenant General Honore. Good morning, sir.
Morning, General. Did the Supreme Court decision show that the justices just read the newspapers regarding the present just politicians wearing rogues reputation and figured they better step back a bit from its pro-GOP agenda?
All right. Well, four of the Republican-appointed justices held firm, so it was still two-thirds of them holding firm, and two of them went the other way. And Roberts has done this on other occasions. Kavanaugh's a newbie, but it was a surprise, General, and I would think that you probably think it was a welcome surprise.
I think it's the right thing. I mean, we had all the arguments. We had them here in Louisiana. We couldn't get it done over the last session. For the election, but this is the right thing to do, and it's only fair.
Patrick and Innisfail Estates in Baton Rouge. You're on with General Honore, Patrick.
Hey, General. So what does the Green Army think about, you know, all the people moving to Texas out of our state because that's where the jobs are?
I don't know that all the people are moving to Texas. We still have about 4.8 million citizens in Louisiana, but we do have some attrition. Yeah. We know that. And is this one of the reasons?
Well, we got the oil and gas chemical. We got 150 plants. If you want to work in a plant, you can get a job here. But a lot of our skilled and educated folks coming out of college and that have skills, they don't want to work in the plant. The other 15% of our income also come from tourism. So you want to be in the hospitality business. You want to work for the Saints. You want to work in the hotel business. You can find jobs. But we are not a big tech center that doing innovation and technology. That's not our strength. We've put all our emphasis on petrochemical industry, which is abundance of jobs if you got the skills to do it. But I recognize that people are moving to tech.
All right, we will be back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number as we come down for the last quarter hour on WWNO and WRKF. Friday Politics is 877-217-5757. 5757 emails at talk@talklouisiana.org. As we finish the last segment, Patrick in Innisfail Estates was talking about attrition Louisiana is having, particularly to the great state of Texas. And over the last few weeks, there have been a number of stories regarding Louisiana's dependence upon the federal government and a fine op-ed piece in last Sunday's Advocate and Picayune about how we are extremely dependent upon big government in Louisiana. Extremely. And the general noted that in his last appearance on this show. And without the government, we would be in a big hole. Louisiana gets far more from the federal government than it invests. Other states like California get less than what they invest, but yet they seem to like the government better in the Golden State than they do in the Bayou State. But General, I know you were in full bloom as we hit the break about the attrition in Louisiana.
Yeah, I think young people look at where they want to raise their families, and they look at where the state rank in education and health. If you pick up your phone now and you check the air quality in Baton Rouge alone, you will see that for the last couple of weeks we've been with warning on the air if you have any type of respiratory issues. And much of that is attributed to the quality of the air as is affected by these enormous plants that are putting ozone as well as putting greenhouse gases in the air. And you look on your phone and see we got help. People don't want to live in that. They want a more of a controlled environment where they're not worried about. If you look at the lakes in Louisiana, last time I checked, a large percentage of them you can fish, but don't eat the fish because it's been polluted. So that's why people are leaving.
Again, 877-217-5757. Rick in New Orleans. You're on with General Honore. Hi, Rick.
Yes. First of all, I'd like to know where I can reach General Honore. Does he have any physical contact information? Because I might be able to give him a good idea. I'm 87 years old, and I was driving a truck much of my life, so I'm well-traveled in all 48 states. Anywhere where he can be contacted.
All right. Oh, how do we reach the general if he's not on this program?
You just go to my website, which has my name on it, and it has a contact, sir. I look forward to talking to you. And thanks for being a truck driver.
Mm-hmm.
If you eat it, drink it, or sleep on it, it came by a truck. Thank you.
And he's sounding spry at 87 years old.
Yeah.
Stuart, downtown Baton Rouge. Stuart, you're on the air. Good morning, sir.
Jim, the general, and the audience, good morning, General. It's always a pleasure to have you on and to be able to chat with you. General, with all of the colleges and universities within the state of Louisiana, we tout education, things of this nature. Why don't you, what's the real reason you think, other than the items that you mentioned already, that diversified business interests are not interested in coming to this state? It's ridiculous, to be honest with you. Well, why don't you think the politricksters want to do a better job in attracting these entities?
Well, and we got to keep the ones we got. You know, Canes moved their headquarters to Dallas, and now Community Coffee has just opened a second headquarters in Dallas. They go to Dallas because they can get a pool of talent, larger population. We've got 4.5 million people here, about 300,000 of them work in the petrochemical industry, and an equal number in hospitality. But they go to the big centers, Houston, as well as Dallas is attractive if you're just talking about the migration to Texas alone, and they're close enough to come home to LSU and Southern football games. So you can still maintain the culture, and you can buy crawfish in Texas now. You can buy Buddha at gas stations in Texas. So a lot of them are attracted to those bigger job markets, and let's face it, I mean, Houston's fourth largest city in the country with about over 2.5 million people alone. So that attracts jobs and attract tech centers, and much of the oil and gas is run out of Houston.
877-217-5757. A listener asked about the minimum wage bill, which was killed again. So that's 0-for-8 for Governor John Bel Edwards, which has been he's been pushing it every year. This would have raised our wage to $10 an hour starting in 2024. Right now, it's at the federal level of $7.25, while our neighboring state of Arkansas has an $11 minimum wage law that was passed by the voters of the state of Arkansas. So the listener, this is Mike in Mandeville. He wants to know, why doesn't the Louisiana legislature let the people have a crack at this, General Honore?
This is most unfortunate. My grandson's starting the job next week at a grocery store in Florida. As a beginner right out of high school, $14.50 an hour. I got a call from a professor up at LSU Shreveport that had just had a conference with some of the workers that clean the campus. They work for the university. They get paid $8.50 an hour. $8.50 an hour. That is what the impact is suppressed minimum wage is, which means the people are basically qualified for SNAP. They're qualified for Medicaid. So because we don't pay them a decent wage. People need to be paid a decent wage. And this minimum that they proclaimed here in Louisiana, it's a big smile for the restaurant industry because they can offer people $6, $7, $8 an hour to work in hospitality. But that's why there's always such a big turnover, and much of those jobs are dependent on immigrants to do. But this is shameful in the 21st century that we're still dealing with a minimum wage of $7-something an hour. It's embarrassing because people can't live on that.
All right, here's another listener asking about House Bill 131. This one would have eliminated permitting requirements for carrying concealed firearms. The bill died in a Senate committee. Its sponsor was Oil City Representative Danny McCormick, and it didn't make it. And some people were surprised it didn't, but your thoughts about whether that was a good move by state lawmakers?
I'm glad to see that common sense took hold. Can you imagine going to Mardi Gras and everybody can have an M4 on their shoulder or a 9mm stretched on his side without any police? Right now, when police see people in entertainment area and they see the gun, they walk up to everybody and say, let me see that permit.
Well,
if this pass, it's going to be a living hell in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. You talk about the good guy with the gun. Who is that? But just think about people showing up parades with their guns strapped on their shoulder or on their hip. This is totally ridiculous. This does not fit well in our culture. I'll just be honest with you.
All right. The advocate in Picayune today opined about House Bill 247 by Mandy Landry, a Democrat from New Orleans, giving taxpayers an income tax credit of up to $500 a year for purchasing qualified firearm safety devices. This one passed, the headline reads, finally, a bipartisan gun safety law in Louisiana. Is that a good move?
Amazing. Yeah, it's a good move. Anything that promotes safety. But I'd rather they have passed something on background checks, red flag laws, and ban the AR-15 from commercial sales would have been a better move, and to ban ghost guns and the extended magazines in Louisiana. But we didn't get that yet. So we'll see if we can take that and build on it. But the number one killer of children now is guns, and that's a crying damn shame.
Now, another listener asked about the Richard Nelson, the gentleman running for governor of Louisiana. He had a bill regarding third graders, and LABI, I know, put out a press release related to that, commending the legislature for passing the bill. And here it is, House Bill 12, Representative Richard Nelson prohibits the promotion of third graders to the fourth grade whose reading deficiencies have not been remedied by the end of the third grade, providing, quote, multiple opportunities for taking the reading assessment and targeted resources to bring the student up to speed. Is this a good move?
Mississippi did that, and they say they're getting good results from it. But I think the better thing is to fully fund pre-K and early childhood development, because that is one of the biggest things that get people started off in their first, second, and to meet their third grade standards. We'll see. Not quite sure if it would take a law to do that, but so be it. We'll see what happens. But it's a good first move. Doing this and doing nothing, it's better to do this than do nothing. But we need to fund early childhood development. And that is a contributing factor on why kids are not reading at grade level in elementary and middle school.
All right. Senate Bill 63 is another one that I am being asked about. This is from Beth Mizell on Franklinton, who will be on this show with Julie Baxter on Monday. Does not restrict church from practicing indoors or outside. It just merely holds the right to worship in person to a higher standard in the event of another pandemic. We're short on time, but General, do you like it or not? I think that's a no.
Give me some help. We 49 out of 50 in school education help. Okay. Give me a break.
We got to roll, but thank you, General.
Praise the Lord. All right. Pass the ammunition.
Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Until next time, stay safe and stay tuned.